Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we take a complex topic and a stack of sources and boil it down to the essential knowledge you need, quickly and thoroughly.
Right. And today we're digging into how we approach solving problems, something that touches, well, pretty much everything we do.
Exactly. And our main source for this deep dive is quite interesting, the book proposal and complete manuscript excerpts for the Clarity Lab Method by Doug Felby.
Yeah, Doug Felby. He's the founder of Clarity Lab, background in design, leadership, strategic facilitation, which is basically guiding groups through complex thinking, right?
That's it. And organizational development, too. He's spent his career helping people and teams wrestle with really tricky situations.
So our mission today, basically, is to pull out the core insights from the Clarity Lab method. See what's in it for you if you're looking to sharpen your problem-solving approach. Maybe unlock a few things.
Okay, let's dive right in then. The book starts with this pretty bold idea.
Yeah.
The death of deep thinking. What's the gist of that?
Well, Felby's main argument is that our modern culture, you know, the speed of digital tech, economic pressures, the constant battle for our attention, it's all pushed us to undervalue really thinking deeply about problems.
Let's push towards quick answers.
Exactly. The incentive is always to find the fast solution, the quick fix.
It definitely feels like that sometimes. Just get it done. Ugh. But what are the actual costs of rushing things like this?
The book points out some pretty big ones. Failed product launches because maybe the real user need wasn't understood.
Right.
Or think about teams just burning out because they're constantly fighting fires, dealing with symptoms, not the actual root causes.
Mm-hmm.
And even personally, right? How many times have we made a quick decision, maybe under pressure, and later thought, I should have thought that through more?
Yeah, those examples hit home. And the book uses this really striking analogy, going from hunter to prey in the digital world. Can you unpack that a little?
Yeah, it's a fascinating perspective on how we interact online and, well, increasingly offline, too. He argues that many digital environments are intentionally designed using really sophisticated methods to capture our attention and steer our behavior, often for commercial reasons.
Okay.
And the point is, as individuals, we often don't have those same kinds of tools to even understand how we're being influenced, let alone push back or make fully independent choices.
So we're the prey in what the book calls this manipulation economy.
Mm-hmm.
A bit stark, but I see the logic. Organizations have these powerful tools, and we're just kind of experiencing them.
That's the idea. And the book's core proposal really is about turning the tables. What if we could take some of those same tools from commercial design, from strategy, and repurpose them for ourselves?
How so?
To help us understand the forces shaping our choices, the systems we're in, and ultimately to reclaim a bit more agency. Personal empowerment, basically.
Right. Reclaiming agency. Okay, this leads to another really interesting claim. That in this age of information overload, clarity itself is the key advantage, a competitive advantage. Why is clarity so powerful now?
Well, connect it back, right. If everything is noise and distraction, the ability to actually see clearly, to understand what's really going on beneath the surface, that becomes incredibly valuable.
Makes sense.
And Felby draws a contrast between his Clarity Lab method and more traditional frameworks, the ones he calls destination focus.
You mean like the usual project phases? Discovery, alpha, beta, live, stage gate processes, the double diamond model, even agile.
Exactly those. They're often built on the assumption that we already know more or less where we're trying to end up. They provide a path to a known destination.
Okay.
But Felby says this can lead you into a destination trap. You might be so focused on getting there that you miss crucial information, or maybe you realize too late you were solving the wrong problem altogether.
The destination trap. So the Clarity Lab method avoids this by being destination agnostic. It forces you to really dig into the problem first before you even think about the destination.
That's a fundamental difference, yes. It puts huge emphasis on what he calls the lost art of problem definition.
Lost art.
Oh, yeah. Historically, think about philosophers, the scientific method, framing the right question, was paramount. But somehow, culturally, we've developed this strong solution bias. We just want to jump to the answer.
Impatience, maybe. And the book mentions our own psychology plays into this too, right? Cognitive biases.
Absolutely. Things like confirmation bias, where we seek out information that confirms what we already think. These mental shortcuts can seriously get in the way of proper problem exploration.
And there was a case study in the excerpts, wasn't there? about a tech company.
Yes, a great illustration. They had high engineer turnover, the initial assumption. It must be about money.
So they probably threw money at it.
They did. Increased compensation, but it didn't fix the turnover.
So what was really going on?
When they finally did a deeper dive using some of these exploration techniques, they found the real issues were things like meeting overload, really unclear decision-making processes, and fallout from a recent reorg. Nothing a simple pay rise would solve.
Wow. That really shows the cost of not framing the problem correctly up front.
Exactly. Big costs.
So if that's the wrong way, what does effective problem exploration look like, according to the book? It's not just sitting around pondering, is it?
No, definitely not passive. The book describes it as active, like deliberately seeking out different views, challenging assumptions. It needs to be structured using processes to make sure you're thorough. Collaborative bringing in diverse perspectives is key. And iterative.
Iterative, meaning?
Meaning you loop back. You refine your understanding as you learn more. It's not just a one-shot deal.
Okay. Active, structured, collaborative, iterative. And what are the risks if we short-circuit that? If we converge on a solution too early? Premature convergence, I think the book called it?
Yeah, several big risks. You might completely miss groundbreaking solutions because you just didn't explore widely enough.
Right.
You can get major resistance when you try to implement something because stakeholders weren't really involved in understanding the why.
Mm-hmm.
And fundamentally, you limit your own learning. You don't truly understand the dynamics you're dealing with.
The book had some stats on this, didn't it, about project failures and personal regrets?
It did. Pretty stark numbers. It mentions the Standish Group's CAS reports they track IT project success. Unclear requirements, which often comes from poor problem exploration, is cited as a major cause of failure, like around 35% of the time.
Wow. 1 in 3.
Yeah. And personally, decisions made without that deeper look are apparently about 2.5 times more likely to be regretted or reversed later on.
Okay, that really makes the case for spending time in the problem space. So how does the method help us resist that temptation to jump ahead?
It offers concrete techniques, things like explicitly time-boxing exploration, literally setting aside protected time just for understanding the problem.
So you commit to it.
Right. And using structured divergence methods, tools designed to force you to think more broadly beyond your initial hunches.
Okay. Now, another interesting concept shift mentioned is moving from systems thinking to self-thinking. What's the distinction there? We hear a lot about systems thinking.
Systems thinking is crucial, right? Understanding how all the parts connect and influence each other, like the gears in a machine. But Falvey argues it can sometimes miss the individual perspective.
How so?
Well, self-thinking, as he puts it, brings in the person interacting with the system, their agency, their experiences, their values, how they make meaning within that system. It's an integrated approach.
So balancing the big picture view with the individual's role and power within it.
Exactly. It acknowledges that we influence systems and systems influence us. It's a two-way street. And the book suggests that starting from this self-first perspective can actually unlock a lot more ownership, innovation, and meaningful change.
Interesting. Okay, so we've got the why deep exploration matters. Let's get into the how. What is the Clarity Lab methodology in practice?
It's structured around three main phases, but they're interconnected and iterative, not strictly linear steps. Think of them more as different thinking modes.
Okay, what are they?
They are explore together, elaborate, and land and scale.
Explore together, elaborate, land, and scale. Let's take the first one, explore together.
Mm.
Sounds like that initial deep dive we've been talking about.
Precisely. This is all about getting a really thorough, shared understanding of the problem space. Digging into causality, finding root causes, not just symptoms, mapping the environment, understanding the context, the constraints, the interdependencies, and identifying stakeholders, who's involved, what are their perspectives.
Okay, a lot of mapping and understanding. Then comes elaborate. What happens here?
This is where you open things up. Instead of narrowing down to one solution right away, you consciously expand the possibilities, develop multiple potential future scenarios.
Multiple future.
Yeah. And then you test the assumptions behind those scenarios, often using low-fidelity prototypes or experiments, and you work on crafting compelling stories or narratives around these possibilities. It's generative.
Very creative. Sounds like it.
Okay.
And the final phase, land and scale. This sounds like where the rubber meets the road.
It is. This mode is focused on translating that hard-won clarity into actual action. How do you make change happen? It involves things like creating influence blueprints, mapping out how to bring stakeholders along, developing practical change roadmaps, and setting up ways to evaluate progress and keep learning.
So it really covers the whole journey, from deep understanding through to making change stick and learning from it. Now, the excerpts mention specific tools within these phases. Can you give us a flavor of a few? What might someone actually do?
Sure. So in Explore Together, one powerful tool is causal loop diagrams. These are visual maps showing how different factors influence each other. They're great for surfacing those hidden feedback loops that often keep problems stuck.
Ah, I can see how that would work for, say, team communication breakdowns.
Exactly. Another one is problem trees. These help you visually untangle the roots of a problem from the core issue and the symptoms you see on the surface. Really clarifies what you're actually dealing with.
Like peeling an onion.
Kind of, yeah. Then there's context mapping, visualizing the whole environment around the challenge. Key players, resources, obstacles, and stakeholder mapping, analyzing who cares, who has influence, what their stance is.
A lot of visual sense-making tools there. What about in the elaborate phase?
There you've got techniques like scenario planning, basically creating structured stories about different ways the future might unfold. Helps you anticipate and prepare.
Not just predicting one future, but exploring several.
Right. And future prototyping, which is about running small, low-risk experiments to test the core assumptions underlying those future scenarios. Learn quickly, fail cheaply.
Smart. Reduces risk. And for land and scale.
Tools here focus on implementation, like influence blueprints, strategically planning how you'll gain the necessary support and navigate the social dynamics of change.
Politics, basically.
Well, the human side of change, yeah. And the book also includes the Clarity Checklist. It's a set of structured questions to guide decision-making at key points.
Any examples from the checklist?
One that stood out was something like, have I truly defined the underlying problem I'm trying to solve? Am I addressing the root causes or just the surface-level symptoms? Really forces that pause for reflection.
That's a great sanity check question.
Yeah.
Now, the book talks about applying this method at different scales, individual, team, organization. How does that work briefly?
Yeah, it's designed to be flexible. For an individual, it's about personal clarity, better decision-making. The book calls it strategic self-navigation.
Strategic self-navigation, I like that.
Yeah. The examples mentioned using it for things like career changes, figuring out life direction, using self-facilitation, like structured questions for yourself, documenting your thinking.
And what about for a team?
For teams, it's about getting everyone on the same page, building collective clarity, especially useful for those tricky recurring problems or big cross-functional efforts.
So teams doing problem mapping together.
Exactly. Collectively mapping the problem, surfacing hidden assumptions everyone holds, developing shared scenarios for where things could go. There was a product team case study showing real benefits.
Okay. And then the biggest scale, organizational.
Here it's about tackling strategic challenges. Things like strategic drift, where the company is kind of losing its way, or if decision-making feels very reactive.
So mapping the strategic landscape.
Yes. Things like strategic context mapping, really questioning the organization's core assumptions about its market or future, and building a clear, shared strategic narrative. The manuscript mentioned examples in public sector transformation and corporate strategy shifts.
Sounds incredibly versatile, but you know, adopting new methods is hard. How do you actually integrate this? Make clarity stick day to day?
That's a critical point the book addresses. It's not just about using the tools once. It's about building clarity habits.
Habit?
Yeah. At the individual level, maybe consciously building reflection time into your decisions. For teams, perhaps embedding things like problem space retrospectives, looking back not just at what happened, but why, digging into the problem understanding.
And for the whole organization.
It requires leadership commitment, really making problem space thinking a priority, maybe building it into planning processes or rewarding deep understanding, not just quick fixes.
And what about when everything's changing? We live in turbulent times. How does clarity hold up under pressure?
The book talks about developing clarity resilience, the ability to maintain clear thinking even when things are uncertain or shifting rapidly. It means adapting the practices, being flexible, using clarity to navigate ambiguity, not just stable situations.
Clarity resilience, another good term. Okay, so if we were to boil down this whole deep dive into the Clarity Lab method, what's the absolute core message for our listeners?
I think the main takeaway is that this method offers a structured yet flexible way to approach problems that really prioritizes deep understanding first. It's destination agnostic, helping you grasp the landscape before charting a course.
Which feels quite different from how we often operate.
It does. And the ultimate promise is that this leads to more effective action, less wasted effort, and a greater sense of empowerment, whether that's for you individually, in your team, or across an organization.
It certainly presents a strong challenge to that default cultural mode of just rushing to solutions.
Yeah.
It sounds like it could offer you, our listeners, some genuinely valuable frameworks and tools for work, for life, really.
Absolutely. If you're intrigued by really getting to the bottom of problems, by this idea of regaining some agency in a complex world, or by achieving clearer strategic thinking, then the Clarity Lab method based on these materials seems like something definitely worth looking into more.
So here's a final thought for you to chew on, something to take away from this. In a world that constantly yells for your attention and pushes for the quick fix, how might intentionally slowing down, taking that time to truly understand the problems you face, actually unlock unexpected opportunities and create more meaningful, more sustainable outcomes for you? Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.